Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Well, hi there and good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, what a day. We are into January. And I don't know, did you get any little dusting of snow where you were?
A couple of days ago.
Okay,
some a few days ago.
And we got quite a bit. And now the rain is back for a few days, I guess.
Yeah. No, our big adventure this week was last Sunday night.
Okay.
My wife and I went out for dinner. And came home and opened the garage and saw water running down through all the ceiling light fixtures.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And a pipe up in the attic had frozen and broken. And getting a plumber to come out on an emergency basis on a Sunday night in 13-degree weather.
Yes.
Is not easy.
And then you're looking at your light fixtures, and that's a scary thing, watching the water come through the electrical cord.
Yes.
I mean, that's, seeing that, it's scary looking.
Well, yeah, so we had quite a flood going on.
Wow.
So we finally did find a guy who came out, in the dark and the cold to get wet and turn off all the water for us. He had to break apart the cover to the water meter because it was frozen shut.
And, oh boy!
But that's the city's problem.
There you go.
We got our water shut off.
Okay.
Unfortunately for us, our house is heated by water circulating through the floors. So when our water went off, we lost our heat.
Oh boy!
So we had Sunday night with no heat and no water
and cold floors
and icy floors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was it was an interesting night, but. Monday morning, we got our favorite plumbers out, and they got found and repaired the leak and, restored our heat and restored our water. And now we're just in the process of fixing all the water damage.
Okay.
Because they had to cut out a lot of sheetrock. And
did they have to poke holes up in the ceiling or in the walls?
They actually had to cut a great big, about 20-foot strip of sheetrock out of the ceiling and then go up and suck out with big pumps to get all the water out of the attic. And then they had to remove all the wet, frozen insulation. And right now we've still got great big warmed blowers blowing warm, dry air up through our attic trying to dry everything out.
Oh, boy.
So,
but you're back to warm now?
But we're warm.
Warm, and, just noisy with all those fans.
We're warm and cozy. Yeah, we just got all the heated. And that's one more day. They're going to come move those tomorrow.
Okay.
And then we got to put the insulation back. Then we've got to re-sheet rock. And then we got to get it repainted and yada, yada, yada. So,
yes.
Got to restore all the damage. But
all of those
all
things.
From one little pipe
yes.
that got frozen.
Oh, man. And I just had snow. But your week was way more exciting.
Than
that. So,
Oh, well.
Okay. Well, Dr. Umat is not here today. You and I here.
It's just us, kid.
Of course. And we welcome your phone calls. We invite you to call in at the beginning of the show so that we don't have anybody left over that we can't talk to at the end. We don't want to miss out on anybody. That number to call for Leading Edge Medicine today to be on the show with your questions, 206-421-5757. And I'll say that a little slower because I talk fast. 206-421-5757. Okay. lines are blinking. Let's take a phone call.
Let's do it to it.
All right. We have Dave on the line from Edgewood. Good morning, Dave. You're up early. or to the phone early,
it's
I should
10
say.
O'clock in the morning. What do you mean up early?
Yeah.
I get up at 5. Come on.
Yes.
Slug a bit.
Anyway,
how are you, Dave?
Good morning. I've had this inguinal hernia for about 2 years, and if I'm laying flat, I can push it back in, and it'll stay in. But, of course, when I'm standing up, it pops out. And I was wondering if I need to get it repaired, or since it's been stable for 2 years. And I can lift 25, 30 pounds. It doesn't seem to bother me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've actually got a couple of choices.
What kind of a hernia was that, doctor? I didn't hear.
Inguinal.
An inguinal hernia.
This is a hernia down far lateral, low on the groin. It's where the nerves, the blood supply, and the spermatic cord actually come out through the abdomen, run under the muscles and skin down into the scrotum to provide the blood supply and nerve supply to the testicles.
Okay.
And that's because before we're born, men, the testicles are actually start developing up inside the abdomen, up near the kidneys. And they descend, go down through this inguinal canal to the scrotum. Some men, that space, you have to have an opening there to get those cord structures through. Some men, that space is a little bigger than it really needs to be. And what happens is through the years with all the lifting and pushing and pulling we do and being upright, bowel will start to come out that space along with the cord structures. And that's what he's feeling is that bulge is actually a piece of his gut pushing its way, trying to go all the way down to the testicle to follow that cord down. If it's a small bulge and isn't causing any pain or problem, then it's not a big deal.
And he couldn't just push it back? And
you do like just push it back.
He's doing, okay.
But then whenever he stands upright, gravity is pulling it down again. Whenever he tightens up his stomach muscles for any reason, he's putting increased pressure in the belly, and the bowel's pushing back out through the inguinal canal. So that's what he's really feeling there is a piece of gut coming out.
Wow.
And the surgery is basically to just go in and tighten up that ring, push everything back inside where it belongs, and then you close up that ring, that opening, so that it's too small. You can't close it completely because you still have to have the nerve and the blood supply to the testicles going through there. But you want to snug it around those enough that the gut can't get in, but the blood supply and the nerve supply to the testicle is not interfered with.
Okay.
So
how do you know if you need to get it fixed? Pain?
Pain, yeah, people that are having pain or people in whom it's getting bigger and bigger over time, the worry is that sometimes you'll get a piece of bowel that will go down into that canal and get trapped. It'll get caught or twisted. And then you have a piece of gut that actually can die, and you've got a surgical emergency. Now you've got a piece of bowel that is dying because it's trapped in that canal and can't get back out. But usually people start having a fair bit of discomfort long before things get trapped permanently. Although, golly, 40-some years ago, I did see one guy in his 80s who actually had a piece of necrotic bowel from a trapped inguinal hernia. And then we had, instead of a simple repair of a hernia, we had a major bowel resection to do on this guy.
Wow.
I've only seen it once in 40 years.
Once. Okay. so, and did was he just being tough or you know?
Bad luck.
Well,
he'd had it for years and years and years. And like I said, he was in his 80s. He didn't figure it was going to
get. Not a big deal.
Hadn't bothered him till then. Why would it bother him now? And well, his luck ran out.
Okay. Is that helpful for you, David?
Yes. So if I start having the pain, then I can have it fixed at that time.
Yes, yeah. But, you know, watch it. You don't want to let things go too bad. If it's getting bigger and bigger, that's probably a sign that you ought to go get it done.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot for your help.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
All right. Thank you for the call, David. And you can call, too. We are live in the studio. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, 206-421-5757. Headed to Bothell now. Matt is on the line. Hi there, Matt. Good morning.
Good morning, Lynette. Good morning, Dr. Mixon.
Good morning, Matt. How can we help you, sir?
So my question to you is, I hear a lot of different numbers as far as, I'm 66 years old. I've noticed that as I'm getting older here, I'm losing some muscle mass, which I'm not happy about. So what I wanted to find out was, I see lots of numbers on protein levels for as we get older. The story I've read is that the body doesn't use the protein we eat as well, and so we need to crank that number up pretty high. And I've heard numbers up in like the 130 grams a day. And it just seems like that, to me, that seems really a lot. And I'm just kind of wanted to get your opinion on that.
Okay. Well, basically, about a gram per pound is about the most anybody, even a bodybuilder, is going to need. And that's a pound of lean muscle mass, of lean body mass. That's not of total body weight. Yeah, what's happening with us as we get older, we are developing senescent cells in our body. The senescent cells are cells that have reached the end of their lifespan, and instead of dying and being replaced, they undergo a morphologic change, and they start kicking out chemicals that are anti-growth, anti-healing, anti-repair. And these senescent cells are basically poisoning our good cells. And in our gut, the higher level of senescent cells in the bowel causes the villi, the little projections that line the gut that absorb our nutrients. Those start to atrophy, and they get from very big and long and luxuriant, they become stunted and small and little, and they don't do as good a job of absorbing nutrients. And that's part of sarcopenia, which is the loss in muscle mass with age, is also everything else is shrinking. The lining of your gut is shrinking, so you don't absorb food as well. Your heart is getting weaker and unable to pump blood as efficiently. Your lungs don't do as good a job of exchanging carbon dioxide for oxygen when you breathe. Your bones start to thin out and lose their durability. And this is something we treat holistically at Longevity Medical Clinic. Mm-hmm. So we got to take a little break just because we are at that time. It's 15 after, but I'll be back right after the break and let's chat some more.
Stay with us, Matt. We're going to talk more about that. We're also going to talk with Tammy and Ron in just a moment as well. And we have room for you in the queue. Give us a call. It's Leading Edge Medicine at 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
You know, I'm still standing better than I ever did. Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. And I'm still standing after all this time.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine, and we are still standing. Well, Dr. Mixon is. I've got too many things in front of
sitting.
Me. Yeah, for now. Yeah, do we get
those
tall desks?
Sitting helping. I caught up in that music, was dancing a
bit. Well, yes, you were. Yes, you were. Leading Edge Medicine, here's the number to call to get through with your questions today. It's 206-421-5757, and Matt is on the line. We're talking protein.
Yeah. Protein intake for older people is an interesting question because it depends on how well the older person can utilize the protein. And if your gut is becoming atrophic, then you don't absorb it in the first place. And putting more through the gut doesn't help a whole lot for those folks. If we're able to knock down your senescent cell load and you've got a very active bowel, then, you don't need to increase your protein so much. So the real question is, why are you losing muscle mass?
That's a good question. Everybody, your normal doctor would say, it's just because you're getting older and that happens.
And he's right.
That's not the answer.
Well, no, it is the answer. You're older, and so your anabolic hormone load is down. Your dehydroepiandrosterone, pregnenolone, testosterone, are all lower. Your growth hormone levels are lower. Your senescent cell load is increased. And so you got a whole lot of stuff that is perfectly normal for aging, but sucks.
Normal's
great when you're 18, but by 60, normal stinks. So
if your T level is around 500, which I think mine is that a sign that that needs to get up along with the others to stave off this muscle or loss that I'm seeing? Or?
Yes, that along with as many of the growth factors as we can stimulate and to decrease your senescent cell load. Yes, all of the above.
Okay.
How old are you, did you say? 60?
66.
66,
is that right?
66, yeah. So, all right. Yeah. So you're 10 years younger than me. All right. We can generally turn this around. It is rare that we can't. So if we knock down your senescent cell load, if we move all your anabolic hormones back up where they belong, and 500 is pretty robust for a man of your age, assuming your sex hormone binding globulin is low enough that you're able to convert a fair bit of it into free testosterone. Most men of your age are running a free testosterone that are pretty low, down in the 50s and 60s. And our target is to get it up around 150 to 180. And that generally requires a total testosterone up around 800 or 900. But about 1% to 2% of your total testosterone is usually in the free form. And that depends in part of what your sex hormone binding globulins and albumin are. So these are also things we have to look at.
I don't want to take up too much time. Can you quickly tell me what are the drawbacks to either your method of raising the testosterone or anybody else's method of raising it? What are the drawbacks to that?
Sure. Well, the drawbacks are if you want to have more children, testosterone supplementation is a pretty good birth control because if you're taking enough exogenous testosterone, your sperm production will drop dramatically. So while your libido, your desire for sex, and your ability to have sex will go up, your capacity to have children as a result of that will go down. So for childbearing, that's a drawback. You know, I married a woman 30 years my junior when I was 58. And when I was 64, she decided she desperately wanted a baby.
I want a baby.
So I had to go off of all of my hormones for about 4 months and take some chorionic gonadotropin to flog my elderly testicles back into making enough sperm so that our daughter was born when I was 65.
Wow. And so, how did you feel going off of everything, Dr.
Oh, Mason? Awful.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
Yeah, because I've been on therapy since I was 49, and I never have experienced what a normal 60-some-year-old man is supposed to feel like. I've always had my hormone levels at a 25-year-old level. And all of a sudden, I went from 25 to 65 hormonally.
Oh, boy.
It was ghastly. Oh, I never, no. ever, ever, ever want to go back there. So that is a drawback. Some people get some acne, so you need to watch for that. Mood-wise, well, if I put all of the hormones in your brain back to where they were when you were young, you will think and feel more like a young man. But that means that sometimes your brain might write checks your body has trouble cashing.
Uh-oh.
My wife is always reminding me, when I want to do things, because I've always been a bit of an adrenaline junkie, that Jerry, don't do that.
No, you're not going to do that.
you're 76 years old. Come on, slow down.
And now your insurance won't allow that, for the company, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Dr. Mixon jumping out of planes and glacier skiing this week.
You got it. Yeah, my insurance carrier, they bought some Key Man insurance on me a while back, and it was umpteen million dollars worth. And they said, okay, if we're going to insure a man of your age for that much, no more motorcycles, no more skydiving, no more scuba diving, no more flying your own airplane, no more And so it took a lot of the adrenaline out of my life. Nevertheless, I would rather think and feel the way I do than the way that most men my age think and feel. Yeah, I mean, I got up this morning, I shaved, I did 50 squats, I dropped on the floor, I knocked out 65 push-ups, and I went to breakfast, and then I went on the trail for 4 miles. Having the hormone balance of a 25-year-old has significant advantages if you want to function better than you are, quote, supposed to at your age. And my wife describes me as a hormonally enhanced creature, not a normal man.
I love that. I love that. Oh, is that helpful for you, Matt?
It is. Thank you very much.
All right, Matt. I hope we get to see you and move things around for you. I'd like to get you running, jumping, leaping, cavorting, and dancing into the night with a big, silly grin on your face. So you take care, sir.
Sounds like a plan.
Plan.
Bye-bye, sir.
Thank you so much for that, Matt. Hey, we are going to head to Tacoma now. Tammy is on the line. Oh, Tammy, thank you so much for your patience. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in the schedules for older people like 60s, 70s, 80s on bone density tests, frequency, mammograms, endoscopies, colonoscopies, PSAs. So I'm looking at the men and the female side of it. Because it sounds like the insurance companies are cutting them out as you get older.
Yes.
So can you tell me what do you think older people should be getting if they're not going to see you yet?
Well, I think they should be getting a whole lot more than the insurance companies want to pay for, quite frankly. Insurance companies get nihilistic. They say, you're old, statistically you're going to die, and we'd rather not spend the money. So, for instance, most insurance companies and most medical clinics now will no longer do a PSA on a man over about 70 or 75 years old.
Wow.
That's what I found out from my husband. Yeah, they won't do that.
No, and I do them on every man in my clinic, usually a couple of times a year, two or three times a year, because I want to know if that PSA is starting to rise, that tells me something is changing in his prostate. Now, it may just be an infection, it may be BPH, but it could be a cancer, and I want to know why it's raising. So if I see a rise in PSA, we start to investigate to discover why. Okay. You know, mammograms should be done at least every year.
See, now they want to cut that back to every 2 years.
Sure, because, you know, after all, statistically, you're more likely to die of cardiovascular disease than breast cancer, so why bother looking for it?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So what can you do, doctor, when you're dealing with your primary in order to get these tests
you needing? Just have to pay for them yourself.
You do. Okay.
I mean, Medicare and the insurance carriers have their rules.
Okay.
And when you sign up with them, you agree in writing to follow their rules.
Their rules. Okay.
Okay, their then money, what about rule? Bone density tests? How often? I think that's like every 5 years.
Yeah. It depends, too, though, on what symptoms they've got and what else I see going on. You know, in our clinic, we often grow denser bones in women and men as they age. So I always love it when one of our ladies goes back and gets her bone density repeat and they are scratching their head because their bones are denser than they were 5 years ago.
Okay, and then I don't want to cut you off if you've got more to say, but I'm also looking at endoscopies if you have Barrett's disease or GERD, or colonoscopies if you have polyps.
Okay. Well, that's an iffy question, and let me explain why. And I never really know what the right answer is with that one. Oops, I'm getting a signal. I've got less than a minute. Tell you what, let's take our break.
Okay.
And then I'll come right back and we'll talk some more about this subject, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Perfect. You're listening to Longevity and Leading Edge Medicine. We're talking about your health, the way you're feeling, your symptoms, your diagnoses, and we'd love to talk with you too. Here is that number to get through, 206-421-5757. We're back with Tammy, then Ron, then Judy. Stay right there.
I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good.
So good.
I got you.
Ooh. I think think this is your theme song, Dr. Mixon.
Should be. I got Bandine.
I feel good.
Don't need a lot. Don't need much else. God, I hate it when she's gone.
I bet. Oh, boy. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, taking your phone calls and talking with you. And we love to do that every Saturday morning. We're here every single Saturday live in the studio. Mm. And you can reach us with your questions at 206-421-5757. And we were talking with Tammy about scheduling all of the things and why the insurances don't cover them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and Tammy, during the break, I was sitting here. My 11-year-old daughter is fencing épée in a fencing meet this morning, so I'm perusing videos of all of her matches.
And you have a very proud – he has a very proud papa look. He is a very proud daddy.
She's doing well this morning. Yeah. She's lost 2 and 1-5, and, you know, the meet is going on. So, yeah.
Very good.
She was a fierce little fencer. And of course, she fences épée, and that was the weapon I fenced in college. So she's following daddy.
There you go.
Although I got to admit, I was fencing her in the garage the other day, day before yesterday, and I was doing a flesh, which is a running attack. And I was running at her with my weapon outstretched, and she ducked and went around, and I ended up going right past her and crashed into the wall and fell.
Oh, boy.
I got a sore right hip this morning from where I hit the ground. Anyway.
It's going to leave a bruise. Okay.
It did leave a bruise. Anyway. But that's all right. But see, they didn't tell me I couldn't fence.
You're right. In the garage.
That's right. So they gave
with
me
an 11-year-old.
That's right.
You're okay so
well,
far.
Well, I coach her. And you know. Anyway.
With all the protective gear on, huh?
Yes. We have all our protective gear. But even with that, the épée still hurts when you get hurt. Mm. But that's what I taught her early. I said, you know, this is the 18th century dueling sword. It's got a rigid triangular blade. It does not flex very easy. And so when you get hit, it smarts even through your gear. But I've said, sweetheart, that is a reason to hit them. Don't let them hit you.
Very good.
And I saw a T-shirt yesterday that said, fencing, make new friends and stab them. So,
okay, that's cute.
Anyway.
That's very good. Okay, and Tammy, you had one more question about another to schedule.
With the endoscopies and the colonoscopies.
Yeah, the endoscopies. And now, does he have a Barrett's esophagitis?
Yes, he does.
Oh, rats. Okay.
He's on Protonix, but it's like really we both have it. We've both been on Protonix for like 3 or 4 years, have all the polyps in our stomach.
Yeah.
And have to be dilated and all this. But I think they're doing that like maybe every 2 years. It's not every year.
Okay. Well, see.
And the only treatment is Protonix.
Yeah, that's true.
Like
that. Well, and
diet.
Diet and surgical ablations of the epithelium on the lining if it gets too bad. And that's one where every 2 years is about the longest I'd want to go because Barrett's has a very high incidence of conversion to a esophageal cancer. And that's got a very high fatality rate. So if you're high risk of developing esophageal cancer, you want to get it checked fairly frequently.
What about all those polyps you develop in your stomach because you're on Protonix?
Yeah, that's the problem there too. We've altered the physiology of your gastrointestinal tract. And so you don't have that nice, smooth, acid-proof mucosa in your stomach. And again, malignancies and polyps are always something we want to watch. So when they're down there every other year, hopefully they're taking a close look and they're biopsying anything that looks the least suspicious. And, of course, the other end, the colonoscopy, that one is almost all guessing, by golly. We've got rules, we've got recommendations, but while I hate to admit it, our recommendations for how often to do colonoscopy are all based on guesswork. We really don't know how long it takes a adenomatous polyp in the colon to become a cancer. We just don't. Mm. We're saying, you know, every 5 years, if you're healthy, if you've got polyps, every 3 years, but we don't know. That's a guess. That it might need to be sooner. The problem is that when you get old, they don't want to do the colonoscopies at all anymore.
No, They don't.
And
I don't want to do those.
No.
You know, you try to get an endoscopy done the same day you have your colonoscopy.
Yes. Because right, you know, they're already doing some sedation. You're already going to get some anesthesia services. So why not go ahead and do the colon at the same time? And you know, they're afraid because, as I was talking to the earlier guy, the lining of the bowel is getting thinner and less robust with age, and with all those senescent cells we're building up. And so two things. A, they don't want to give you the anesthetic because old brains don't tolerate anesthesia as well as young brains. And, you know, they would really rather not get sued for dropping your IQ. And two, the risk of perforating your colon goes up because it just gets more fragile with age. And three, you're old and probably going to die of something else earlier than the colon cancer would kill you anyway. So why bother?
Mm.
That's really the attitudes. So let me tell you how I'm approaching this at 76, because they don't want to do my colonoscopy anymore either, but
we're looking at 80 and 86.
Yes, I understand. I'll be there soon enough.
So when we go through it with bone density tests, I never hear of men getting bone density tests. It seems like it's women all the time.
Well, that's because women start with lower testosterone.
Mm.
Okay. Testosterone stimulates the bone, the osteoblast, to make new bone. Estrogen slows the loss of bone. Estrogen inhibits the osteoclast, which is the cell that dissolves bone. Because you always, when you're young, you're dissolving old bone and making new bone, and so it's being turned over. As women age, they have less estrogen, so the osteoclast gets more active and starts dissolving bone faster. They start with less testosterone than men, so when they lose testosterone, they stimulate the growth of new bone slower, and that combination of less new bone and more dissolving bone results in faster loss of bone. Older
so
men...
they're mainly looking at hips and spine, I think. That's
yes, the weight-bearing areas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the weight-bearing areas. The areas that carry most of the load are the ones that are most likely to collapse when they get too thin.
And they're just watching for fractured mm-hmm. hips and spine.
Yes. And so what we do at our clinic, of course, is we give you both your testosterone and your estrogen. So you make bone faster and you dissolve it slower. And so our women start making more bone and it gets bigger and thicker and stronger over time instead of getting weaker.
When women get like in their high 70s and pushing 80?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yes. We've started with women that had clinical osteoporosis. Bones thin enough that they were afraid they were going to break, and we've actually got them down to that they were mildly osteopenic. Okay, to go from osteoporosis to osteopenia is a real improvement.
Wow!
So yeah, we do that pretty regularly, Craig. And let's see, where else? Let me tell you how I get around my colonoscopy. Although we're back to break time again.
Yep, yeah, we are.
Been
back
another
to
15
break.
Minutes. Okay, I'll be right back. I'm going to tell you what
Sorry.
I do about my colonoscopies.
Okay.
Okay, and we'll take a break, and then we're back. We'll finish up with Tammy, then we're back with Ron and Judy next. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, and we invite you to call in as well. 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone.
Okay.
I can see all obstacles in my way.
I didn't have rain this morning. I had a little fog and a little snow.
Snow on the ground or fog above.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I was out on the trail. I have rain and it wasn't even too cold, so I did just fine.
Yes.
Okay. The problem with colonoscopy as we get older, obviously they'll want to do it for us unless we have a very good reason to get it done. Now, there is another test. It's a stool test that's looking for genetic markers that are excreted in our stool from malignant or pre-malignant lesions. And you can do that test. One, there's several brands. Cologuard is one. And they don't like to do it in people over 75 because normally our bowels are getting bad gunk. It's just our gut is getting old and fragile and doesn't look good. And so they get false positives sometimes. The stool test will sometimes tell you that you might have a cancer when you don't.
Okay.
But it's very good if it's negative, it's negative. If it's negative, there's a 98% chance you don't have a cancer.
And you don't need to worry
that's
about another colonoscopy.
That's right.
Cologuard.
Okay. Yeah, that's the Cologuard.
Cologuard. Okay.
And it has several other brands. That's not the only brand out there. It's just the one that comes to mind at the moment.
And can you just pick those up at like a pharmacy?
No, unfortunately.
Okay.
But they are about a $200 test. And insurance doesn't want to pay for it because it might be a false positive. Mm. But my philosophy is as long as it's negative, I can relax. If it says positive, then I've got a good argument to go get that colonoscopy. Hey, I had a positive Cologuard.
That's right.
Okay, I've got an indication I might have a cancer. Damn it, do my test. All right.
Okay, now the PSA test is just checking for cancer. What are the testicles? It's not.
The prostate. The prostate, not the testicles.
The prostate, okay.
And PSA stands for prostate-specific antigen. And PSA can go up for anything that increases metabolic activity in the prostate. If the prostate is just big from aging, your PSA will go up. Okay. If you've got a virus infection or bacterial infection, your PSA will go up. Okay. So as long as PSA and prostate cancers produce a lot of PSA.
What if you've gone through cancer?
Your prostate, it doesn't go all the way up to your kidneys and check for any cancer in the kidney.
No. It's prostate specific antigen.
Okay.
That's all it is.
Okay.
As long as a PSA stays low, you say your risk of having a prostate cancer is extremely low. If your PSA starts rising, then we have to say, wait a minute, something's happening in the prostate. What is it? So we go look. Cancer is the most worrisome thing. Mm-hmm. Infections are more likely.
Okay.
But a doctor's job is to look for the common things because they are common, but he should also look for the nasty things because you don't want to miss them. Uh-uh. So PSA, we talk about it as a prostate cancer, but it's actually a prostate metabolism test. And rising PSA more often will not be cancer. It'll be something else.
Okay. Yeah.
But at least it tells us you better look at the prostate.
Okay.
We have your forms. We just haven't. It's taken us a long time to fill them out.
Yeah, we need to see you, Tammy. You need to get in here.
I understand.
But it was there's a lot of questions to answer on those.
Well, there are, because we want to know really what life has done to you up till now.
Yeah.
Well, I think the worst page is how are you doing mentally, and it's all I'm looking at is it's like, well, I'm doing awful when I have a daughter over in Kuwait and stuff.
Yeah.
All hell has broken loose in the world.
Yeah, yes. Anxiety levels, yes.
Oh, boy, yes. Hey, Tammy, thank you for the call.
What is your daughter in Kuwait for? I mean, she lived there? Is she in the military? Is she on a mission? Why is she in Kuwait?
Oops, she's gone.
Okay.
All right. And before we go on to Ron, quick question that came through on this subject. Somebody that's had their prostate removed and they're getting monitored and their PSA levels continue to rise.
They've got metastatic prostate cancer.
Okay.
That's 99% of the answers right there.
Right there, even though they've had the prostate removed.
Well, that means the cancer had already spread outside of the prostate before it was removed.
Okay.
And it may have just been one cell, you know, and so they couldn't tell at the time. But if you had a prostatectomy and your whole prostate is gone and your PSA is rising, then almost certainly you've got a metastatic prostate cancer.
Okay. And what is the next step if that is
Find
the tumor and get that out.
Find that tumor, yes.
So it's hopefully the doctors are keeping an eye on that.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
They'll, if it's rising, you need to go looking for that tumor. You want to find it. And depending on where it is, you can either irradiate it or you know, remove it surgically, but you need to get rid of it as quickly as possible.
All right. I hope that is helpful. Okay. We have Ron from Tiger Mountain calling in. Hi there, Ron.
Hello,
thank you,
Ron,
for waiting.
Good morning. Thank you much for taking the call. I've been a patient with longevity now for almost 10 years. I'm one of Dr. Hewitt's patients.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the reason I called was you had somebody on the earlier program regarding a stroke at an early age, and they're trying to find out what could have caused it and all that sort of thing. And yes, I had a number of those over different programs. I had one at age so over 20 years ago when I was 64.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, Dr. Stewart was my doctor at the time. He couldn't, and the others that were working on this, they couldn't find any particular reason at all. Nothing. They did scans, they did about every test you could think of, and didn't come up for any reason as to why I had that minor one. And it's a family thing. My father, my grandfather's had them, my mother had them, and a couple others. So Dr. Stewart, my doctor at the time, decided to run fractionate the LDL.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, they found that I have a fraction of, it's called LPA parenthesis A, which is sticky and can cause platelets to stick together.
Yep, it sure can.
And so they were pretty sure that's more than likely. And at the time, my platelets used to run about 370, and my LDL wasn't as low as it really should be. So anyway, that's what I've done. I've dropped way down on the LDL. I'm down around 70 usually, or sometimes 60s.
Good.
And they put me on Agonox initially back then, and so my platelet count now runs usually about 260, 270. And that's been over 20 years, and I've most of them have gone. My other families that have had this, well, we assume that. Usually the big stroke, the massive stroke, was somewhere around 80.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I'm pretty lucky.
You've been lucky, and but you know, the good news is that they found your AP, you know, your APO little A, and that is that's important.
Yeah, it's genetic, so you can't change it.
So yes, and this is one of those things that people don't realize. Cholesterol alone is not enough. You have to look beyond that. If you're having symptoms and your cholesterol is high, then by golly, we need to figure out what else is going on, because that cholesterol has very different forms, and we've got lipoprotein little a is a dangerous finding, and if you don't look for it, you don't find it. It's that simple. You know, you've got to do the right test.
And usually 165 to 170.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing that drove everybody out the backside is, why did you have this? Didn't make sense. My LDL was 120, 130, which isn't good. The cholesterol itself was always low. My grandfather and my mother was always the same thing.
Yes.
It was usually 160, 140, 150, that sort of thing.
Sure. Well, but, you know, I'm glad you're a patient at Longevity. And, you know, our doctors are going to do these tests for you on a regular basis. And so, you know, hopefully you're going to miss the family curse. Thank
yes.
you.
Thank
yes. Thank you for your call, sir. I greatly appreciate
yes,
it.
Yes, Ron. Thank you so much for that. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We have one more hour and some more calls to get to. And if you have a call or a question, we invite you to call in. We're going to take a quick break. Here is that number. It's 206-421-5757. Again, that number is 206-421-5757. We're going to be talking about COVID next. Also, constant UTIs. What is the deal with that? And the Galleri test. It's back at Longevity Clinics in February. We'll give you the details on that and how you can sign up and get more information. Stay right there. Longevity continues in just a moment right here.